Today's edition, Ross gets evicted from a conference room, sees a Dolly Parton lookalike, broadcasts from the side of an escalator at a hotel in Nashville. We also talk college football.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Can we get like an extended like checkout, late checkout, anything? Can we?
Ross Dellinger.
Look, I'm dealing with escalators, lobbies, Dolly Partons, administrators, you know.
And SI's Pat Forney.
And I've been known to make spaghetti sandwiches. This sounds like a spaghetti sandwich.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Big week. You know, we say when nothing's happening, like last week, or not much is supposed to happen, then everything happens. But then when a lot of things are supposed to happen, a lot of things could happen too. Did that make any sense?
College football, baby.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Look, the big game, we talked Red River. We talked Ohio State, Oregon last show. You want to hear some more of that discussion? Feel free to do that. We're going to pick a bunch of games. But I did want to touch back on Ohio State, Oregon, since it is a top five matchup. Talk a little bit about that and some of the other things going on, but there is also a more in-depth conversation in the last show if you want to hail at that. Both of you guys are going to be in Eugene. This is just a monster weekend for University of Oregon and the Ducks. Buckeyes, we're going to see just how good they are. They have looked as good as advertised. This was an excellent team last year that was able to retain so many of its NFL caliber, NFL eligible players who decided to return, sort of following that Michigan model from the year before. And then you could argue that their two best players are actually new players. They go get Caleb Downs from Alabama out of the transfer portal to shore up the defense, if you want to call it shore up. And then they get Jeremiah Smith as a true freshman, top recruit in the country, out of Miami, they need to shore up the receiving core, but they did. Quinshon Judkins is in this mix. Like, I'm wondering if on Saturday night we're just sitting there going, "Oh my, Ohio State is everything that we are advertised to." Pat, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's Ohio State has certainly taken care of business to this point, but they haven't necessarily hit a next gear that I suspect they have. And this may be the time when that happens, although the opponent is good enough, Oregon may prevent it from happening. But the weaponry available is incredible. Will Howard just has to stay out of the way, basically. Make the throws that he should make. Don't make throws that you shouldn't make. And the playmakers will take care of themselves. They can run. They can pass. They can rush the passer. They have the full package. It's interesting. Oregon, you know, for years has been super high octane, explosive offense. And this team doesn't lack explosiveness, maybe, but they aren't quite on Ohio State's level. I was looking Big Ten, 20 plus yard plays from scrimmage. Ohio State has 29, which is third in the league. Indiana's first, but it's also played one more game. Oregon has 22, so seven behind in five games. At 30 yards or longer, Ohio State 15, Oregon 10. I just think the chunk plays, which seem to be important in games like this where you can move the ball easily and get yourself in scoring range, I think that's advantage Ohio State. One of the reasons I like them in this matchup.
Yeah, it's going to be a big one. I think it's like the first, maybe top five matchup of two top five teams in Austin Stadium history. And I believe it's the first top maybe three matchup on NBC. Of course, they just cover Notre Dame games mostly, right? But like since like the early 90s. And so it's going to be titanic. And I like what Pat said, because it's funny, Ohio State and the way they play and the weapons they have reminds you of like the old Oregon teams that had all those weapons and played really quickly and scored a lot of points. And in Oregon, you know, Dan Lanning's kind of built Oregon type of like SEC kind of type of program where they do run the ball quite a bit and they rely on their defense. The thing we haven't seen from Ohio State is them play a close fourth quarter game. Don't know like what happens, you know, how the team players react and how they'll respond to really any adversity. They haven't really had it that much this year. And Oregon has. We've seen Oregon in a couple of close games that maybe we didn't expect against Idaho and Boise. But Jordan James for Oregon, I'm excited to watch him and how they I would assume the idea would be to keep the ball and hog the ball as much as you can for Oregon and keep it away from all those Ohio State playmakers. That has to be number one for the Ducks.
The Oregon offense, that classic Oregon offense, of course, was built in large part by Chip Kelly. Mm-hmm. He's now the offensive coordinator at Ohio State. The other offseason addition, they just went out and got UCLA's head coach. I mean, Buckeyes offseason was just absolutely incredible. Think about this, these additions that they just added to a team that was already 12-1, right? They finished 12-1.
Yeah. They lost the bowl game.
Okay. Oh, that's right. And people were really it was like, relax.
Yeah.
Did they lose to Missouri? Like,
you know, 19 opt-outs or whatever.
Yeah. Right. And it's like, we'll be okay. Yeah. I mean, what an offseason. We also need an off. How about we get UCLA's head coach? He's only considered. throw that in there. So you have the return of Chip Kelly, which is already a storyline. One more question on this. Dylan Gabriel, okay, and Will Howard. And a little bit to what Ross just alluded to. So Dylan Gabriel is an excellent college football quarterback, right? A year ago, this very weekend, he's leading Oklahoma in the Red River rivalry, not shootout. Remember, we don't want to encourage shooting. Yeah.
Yes. No, thank nope, you. Don't do that.
No shoot. I was on Kings of the North podcast this week, and they were asking about intense games. I said they had to change the name of the game from shootout to rivalry because people were shooting each other.
And like removing each other's genitals involuntarily.
Oh, God.
Remember that? You remember?
I think I tried to forget that.
Thanks for bringing that back up. Outside the bar in Oklahoma. Yeah.
Oh, there was that.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah. In fact, didn't a listener send a video or a picture of the site of the crime, the scene of the crime?
Yes, the scene of the emasculation. Yes.
Yes, that's right. I'm going to look that up. We'll discuss that later. One of our listeners went to the bar and asked which bar stool. It wasn't outside. It was inside the bar.
You're right. It was inside.
Okay. At this point, everything was, the crime scene was cleaned up and moved on. And all right. We'll get to that. Boy, we can lose the train of thought really quick. Will Howard, we have not seen in this level of game. Dylan Gabriel, these are Oregon and Ohio State were like mid-season saying we're going to go get a quarterback, and they were going to spend to get a quarterback. And I think Oregon had kind of first choice, and they chose to go get Dylan Gabriel over Will Howard. Does he outplay Will Howard? Is Will Howard ready for this level of game? It's pretty much the only questions I have, other than I guess what Ross said, we haven't seen him in a close game. Okay. But that's a good problem to have. You know, and Dylan Gabriel's excellent. The thing about Oregon, they had Bo Nix last year, and I think even Pat's warming somewhat to Bo Nix as the Denver Bronco quarterback. He's a rookie starter winning games in the NFL. Bo Nix was really, really, really good. Dylan Gabriel is not projected to do that. So where does this all fit in? How important are these QBs, Ross?
Yeah, huge, right? And it is interesting. You know, we talk a lot about the QB transfer kind of market. And yeah, I mean, a lot of these QBs, you wonder if you switched them, right? And a lot of them could have been switched. They were this close to being switched and going to the other school that they're now playing. But huge stage here for these two quarterbacks. You know, they have fairly similar numbers. They played similarly. think Dylan Gabriel averages a little more yards, but they're almost identical when it comes to like touchdowns, interceptions. It feels to me, right, that even though the stats are fairly the same, Dylan Gabriel's been a little more loose with the ball. I think he's lost a couple fumbles. You know, Oregon has had trouble once they get inside the red zone a little bit. They've had a little bit of trouble scoring. In fact, I think they're like one of the worst teams in scoring once in the red zone, scoring touchdowns. So that's kind of a blip there. But, you know, Dylan will have the home team, home stadium around him, home crowd. I mean, that place is going to be rocking. I mean, it gets pretty wild there. It gets pretty loud there. I'm sure it'll be pretty crazy, and it'll be the first really big, loud environment probably that Will Howard will face this year. Maybe the loudest that he has faced in his career.
Yeah, the quarterback matchup is interesting. Dylan Gabriel's on pace to break Bo Nix's record for career college starts. He's been around forever. He was at Central Florida, then he was at Oklahoma, and now he's at Oregon. And it was interesting. The reason he's still in college, he's a really good college quarterback. He's accurate. He's decisive. He knows what he's doing. He can read defenses. But he's short. I was at the Manning Passing Academy in June and saw him standing next to Peyton Manning, who's probably, you know, 6'4", 6'5". And Dylan's, like, head is at his shoulder. He's listed 6 foot. He's not 6 foot. You know, he might be 5'10 or something. So that's the main reason I would think why he is still a college player as opposed to an NFL player. Will Howard looks more the classic quarterback part. He's 6'4", but he's got some wheels on him. But the whichever quarterback, you know, can make those big plays and get his team in the end zone and not turn the ball over, probably going to go a long way towards deciding this.
If you're just listening, you didn't see this. If you're watching on our YouTube, there was an incident just occurred in the pod. Ross was he's broadcasting from the Grand Hyatt in Nashville, where the Big Ten SEC meetings are happening. Because this is a frontline podcast. We are right there when news breaks.
Boots on the ground.
Right. Boots on the ground. Yeah, that's the dedication that this podcast brings to you guys. But let me just tell you a little something. He just got booted out of his room that had nice lighting. And now he's on the side of a
yeah. I'm in Dan, you know those little like those old kind of phone booth nooks in hotels, like where you go make a call. That's basically what I'm in. Just above me on the fourth floor, the Big Ten and the SEC ADs are meeting, and I went and peeked up there earlier. And by the time you listen to this, I'm sure they're done meeting, and there's probably some decisions potentially or some news that came from the meeting. But I went and peeked up there, and they have a setting that looks like the UN. Over there. I mean, it looks like they're, you know, making global decisions, you know, which to them, well, maybe they are.
They are, really. I've never really cared what they did at the UN, but I have a lot of interest in what's happening. Yeah, you do look like you're in an old phone booth. You know what? Call up Tony Petitti and call up Greg Sankey from your phone booth and tell him this is not acceptable.
Yeah.
You can't silence the pod.
They have a nice
visuals.
They have a nice room reserved for the media on the second floor. I didn't want to disturb all the other media with our pod shenanigans, so I went up to the third floor where a conference room, where I was evicted from a conference room after 30 minutes. So here I am in my little booth.
Big 12.
What do they
need
the conference room for that's more important than the pod?
Yeah, this is the media.
I don't know.
We are the media.
Yeah. Yeah, here we go.
Well, our extensive budget, you get a phone booth. The Big 12 would treat us better. Now, the meeting might be at the Roadway Inn in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, but hey, the Grand Hyatt. Multiple bids for Group of Five. I'm making the stance now. This is how we're going to get treated. Anyway, we're going to be in a lot of trouble for this visual. I can assure you that. Hopefully we have a show on Sunday, but if not, send your complaints to the SEC and Big 12.
Yeah.
Or Big Ten, sorry.
Steven Spielberg would not approve of the lighting on Ross.
It's kind of, I mean, it's horror movie season, right? All right. Well, listen, we're carrying on. I've seen better video from SpaceX, but. Hey, Kansas State's visiting Colorado. We're just going to play through adversity.
See, and we're going to talk about the Big 12. So
we're going to talk about the Big 12. Not talking about you, Big 10 SEC, although we will later. Colorado sold out. Game sold out. Going to be wild. K-State, I think a lot of us think, is either the favorite to, or the best team in the Big 12, or could have been. Could be. We'll see. This is a monster game for Colorado. Are they the team that's won four games? Are the team that did not look competitive against Nebraska? Classic Deion Sanders press conference this week. Spent half of it talking about baseball, declaring not to compare him and Travis Hunter as who's the better athlete. I would still give that to Prime. Love you, Travis, but
yeah.
See that video emerging of Travis Hunter, though, doing like NBA dunk contest level dunks? Good Lord. Deion's message, Coach Prime's message to the team, don't be surprised by the success. How can you be surprised that you're winning in life? How can you be surprised with the expectations you have for yourself? The only way you could be surprised is if you didn't expect it. So totally different dynamic than most people come up with on this stuff. Pat, thoughts on this game? Is this the one where Colorado, I mean, I think they're on their way to having a good season, but this is the moment where all of a sudden you're like, oh, they're a contender.
Yeah, this is huge. It's late night in Boulder, and we have seen some stuff late night in Boulder the last 2 years in the Coach Prime era. They have had wild, wild games in this time slot, so I'm excited for that. It is, you know, the extreme style of Colorado and the complete lack of style that is almost like Kansas State's vanity is its lack of vanity. Like, we are substance. We don't go, no gimmicks, no nothing. Chris Kleiman, you know, salt of the earth, meat and potatoes up from North Dakota State. I think this comes down to whether Avery Johnson takes care of the ball for Kansas State and they run successfully against Colorado. Colorado's run defense is much better this season so far than it has been last season, but I expect Kansas State to be fully dedicated to running the ball. And if Colorado can slow them down enough and then turn this into a bit of a catch-us-if-you-can game where they're scoring and K-State has to keep up, then the Buffs could pull this off. But if it's K-State dictating tempo, grinding it out, run all night, and Colorado can't stop them, then the Wildcats are going to win and potentially win handily.
Yeah, that's what stuck out to me about this one is the styles, the drastic style difference between these two programs. And I think Pat nailed it. You know, if Colorado can slow the running game, they should be able to win this. But if Kansas State's going to sit there and hog the ball, I mean, they're averaging like 250 yards rushing a game, I believe. And Avery Johnson can do it on the ground as well, like quarterback. So I have a hard time believing until I see it that that Colorado's line on the lines can hold up enough to slow down Kansas State's rushing attack. You know, maybe they do it. You know, but we've seen the kind of downfall of Colorado has been the defensive lapses in getting beat, honestly, just at the line of scrimmage, allowing pressures on the quarterback offensively and defensively, not being able to slow down people in allowing big plays. So I have a hard time believing they'll slow Kansas State down. And look, as good as Colorado's been with, you know, Shador and Travis Hunter and all that, they still can't run the ball themselves. And I think that's still going to be a problem, especially when you face a team that's going to hog the ball as much as Kansas State is.
We'll pick this game later. Big 12 is classic in game picking. I'm looking at the spreads this week for the Big 12. Utah's favored by 4.5. UCF is favored by 3. BYU by 3.5. Iowa State by 3. Kansas State by 4. Like, that's just the line. Big 12 is so good. Everything's between 3 and 5. That's it.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, it is a true jump ball every week. Those are NFL lines, and NFL games tend to be one score games that go to the end.
Yeah, I do like producer Joe's work here of muting, having to mute Ross so the background noise. It's like people wandering through the lobby.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. I'm right by a couple of escalators here. People are going in and out. In fact, at some point, if they have on a break, we could see maybe a Big Ten or SEC administrator pop on over and say, you know, wave to the pod, say hello. I mean, I know there's a few
got questions.
They certainly tune in quite often to the pod. Yeah. So.
They listen, but do they want to answer questions?
Yeah, no one wants to admit it. They've stuck you by the damn escalator. Well, you got to be careful of like background noise. Like it's a hotel in Nashville. Like there's just people they're meeting their plug or something like that. Like you don't know what's happening in this lobby, right?
Oh, Dan. Yeah. This morning I walk into the lobby here, and I see this woman, and she's wearing a short skirt and knee high boots, cowboy boots. Got a cowboy hat on with a big blonde wig, and from the back, obviously, it looks like a one Dolly Parton turned around, and let's just say it wasn't Dolly Parton, but it looked like Dolly Parton from the back.
Okay,
there you go.
A near Dolly Parton
end of story.
A near Dolly. Yeah. See, anything can happen. Well, if Dolly comes by, have her come on. We don't even need to talk college football. Just have her sing that haunting Rocky Top one she does is fantastic. Anyway, so all right, tons of good games. I should just probably get to the guy I got his got the bar fight. This show's off. We're in trouble. All right, we'll be back with some intriguing games of the week. Let's not pick games, but there's a lot of interesting games this weekend.
Yes.
So we often do what games intrigue you. And so let's play a little what games intrigue you. Pat, you go first so that we don't get the background noise as Ross keeps his eye out for the Dolly lookalike.
Vanderbilt, Kentucky intrigues me. Can Vanderbilt possibly maintain the all-time program high they hit last weekend in beating Alabama? This game has traditionally been the worst game in the SEC. These two teams, I covered a lot of these, and they were there. It was always in November before us, in early October this time, but it was November. The sky was gray. The weather sucked. The teams were bad. Now, hey, Vandy's 3-2, and Kentucky's a resurgent 3-2. We saw them beat Mississippi. They nearly beat Georgia. Winner of this game sitting there saying, you know, we're pretty good. Loser may not be bad either, but I'm interested to see who can maintain the momentum in a game that used to never mean anything in the SEC.
Ross, you got a pick?
Yeah, I'm going to take the other team that was on the end of the big upset last week, Alabama. Alabama hosting South Carolina. Kalen DeBoer, I think, said on his radio show earlier this week that word had got back to him about his fashion style on the sideline during the Vanderbilt game. He wore an Alabama like T-shirt. They folks in Tuscaloosa did not appreciate. Of course, if he had won that game 50-0, they would have applauded, I'm sure, the fashion. But losing the game, so I don't know what he's going to come out in for this game. I don't know how Alabama's going to come out in this game. South Carolina has certainly been a program that has probably should have beat LSU, right? And was right there somewhat against Ole Miss. I mean, they've got players. Sellers is a good player, a quarterback. They could make this close. I mean, Alabama lost to Vanderbilt and had a tight game with South Florida, blew out Wisconsin, and beat Georgia and was up at 28-0. So I don't know what Alabama team will get here, but man, is the pressure on now, right? You're going to be returning home to home crowd after such a disappointing loss. Kalen DeBoer, he's going to be in only his sixth game. You know, the fans are on him about his fashion, and it just got beat as a number one ranked team. So this one intrigues me to see exactly if Alabama can respond. And if they can be that team that we saw, you know, the first couple quarters against Georgia, that we saw against Wisconsin, or will this team be the one that we saw against South Florida where they had trouble moving the ball, or the one we saw against Vanderbilt where they had trouble stopping anybody doing anything? So this one, yeah, that one intrigues me, Dan. It's 11 a.m. local time kickoff as well there at Bryant-Denny.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Yeah, when there that T-shirt he had, it did look like something you'd kind of work out in. It's a far cry from the...
Well, it looked like the ones you'd find on the racks at Walmart. You know, like the ones that just are like there when you're walking by and they're trying to get you to buy something and they're just like, you know, but I didn't mind it. I don't care, certainly, but fans seem to take an issue with it.
When they're taking an issue with that, you're in trouble.
That's what happens when you lose to Vandy. All of a sudden, your T-shirt becomes a talking point. Win the game, nobody cares.
Yeah, and you know you had Nick Saban could get away with just the collared shirt because he was winning, but for a lot of years it was suit jackets and ties and houndstooth hats.
Bear Bryant,
all of it would just be. So yeah, he's in the mix there. That's not going to be easy. This is not a real shocker, but Ole Miss at LSU. Obviously, it's a great game. Sneaky good rivalry through the years in the SEC West. Also, though, with each team having a loss, LSU's coming out of conference, but Ole Miss is coming in conference. Kind of a knockout game. Not quite, but every week's a playoff. You don't want to have two losses in early October. These are two teams that are aspiring to be in the playoffs, and someone's going to be sitting there with a second loss this early in the season with still a long way to go. I mean, Ole Miss still has Oklahoma coming. They're at Arkansas that's shown a little bristle in them. They got Georgia coming. They're at Florida, Mississippi State. They've still got Arkansas. They got Alabama coming in at home. They got Oklahoma State. They're at Texas A&M still. So both teams have a path here, but you don't want that second loss. So I'm intrigued at where each team is. Ole Miss, terrible 2 weeks ago, really good last week. LSU, we'll see. So a lot there. Pat, you got another one?
Of course. I'm going to double dip, sorry. But two undefeated teams that I can't wait to see if they can remain undefeated. Army is going to intrigue me as long as they keep winning. And they should keep winning this week. They play at noon against UAB, and UAB is terrible. This could be a game. I mean, UAB is going to have to show they want to be there and tackle for 3 hours because Army is going to run it straight at them. And I think Army could roll it up on UAB if they don't want to be there. But also, Pittsburgh 5-0 with Eli Holstein at quarterback. Can those two 5-0 teams that we really aren't talking about keep going and enhance their playoff chances?
I've got a, well, first of all, I'm, where I'm seated, where I'm seated, there's, it's carpet. I'm surrounded by carpet and a guy just walked by and he had the big, the big carpet cleaners, the massive machines that clean the carpet. And I'm like, oh no. And I gave him the look like, please don't crank that thing up. Please. He kept walking, thankfully. So, hey, the power of the pod, Dan. Power of the pod.
I've got a weird one here. Carpet clean.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I've got a weird one here. Boise State at Hawaii. It's 11 p.m. Eastern kickoff. We get to see what I think is the Heisman favorite right now. I know you guys, Travis Hunter or him, right? Going back and forth. I think most would agree. Is Ashton Jeanty, Boise State running back, gets to play that a game that's probably going to end around 2:30. 2:30 a.m. Eastern time against Hawaii there. Get your cup of coffee and watch a little Ashton Jeanty, who has broken 1,000 yards in I think 95 carries, or it took him 90 carries to
90
break 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
10.9 yards.
Get ready for that.
I'm going to go with Iowa State visiting West Virginia. 8 p.m. on Fox. Iowa State's 5-0. And certainly has a path in the Big 12 to get to the championship game, playoff possible team. Maybe the favorite at this point, considering their record. West Virginia has shown some fight. Yes, they lost to Penn State at home to open. That was a weird game also. There was like a huge rain delay. They nearly beat Pitt. It was 38-34 in backyard brawl. But they beat Kansas at home, and then they went to Oklahoma State. And I don't know what's up with that program. It doesn't look too good right now. I got to go to the old folk home in Stillwater to hear the truth from the mullet, Coach Mullet. This is no easy move for Iowa State here. And this is sort of your example of how even is this league. I think West Virginia's got a little bit more in them than maybe we would have thought when they were 1-2 and their only win was against University of Albany. So I got a lot of eyes on that one in the Big 12. Can Iowa State come in and out of Morgantown? If they can, I'll be pretty impressed with the Cyclones, but I don't think that's going to be easy.
Good call there. Good call. That's that, and that's again in that Big 12 crapshoot rotation of who the hell knows week to week. But I'm impressed. Hey, Iowa State and BYU still winning so far.
Yeah. Go ahead, Pat. Another round.
Gonna go SEC. Florida, Tennessee. Tennessee, like Alabama, needs to get it back together after a stunning loss that nobody saw coming at Arkansas. And frankly, the offense hadn't been very good the last two games. They scored 25 against Oklahoma. They scored 14, I think it was, against Arkansas. And now Florida, which, hey, everybody was firing Billy Napier three games into the season. Since then, he's had an off week and won two games. Didn't really beat anybody, beat Mississippi State and UCF, but you can't lose to UCF if you're Florida, and he didn't. They took care of business, won that pretty handily. So, can Florida keep regrouping? Can Tennessee course correct and show themselves again to be like the national title contender we thought they were for the first few weeks of the year? That's a big rivalry game, and that is a huge, huge spread number in a rivalry. 16, Tennessee favored by 16.
All right, to the lobby we go.
Checking back in here from the third floor of the Grand Hyatt. How about, I know we're probably going to pick this game.
Can't we get like an extended like checkout, late checkout, anything? Can we? What kind of budget we got on this show?
What are you talking about? Oh, I didn't stay here. It's like it was like $800 a night or something. Please,
yeah, that's good. Sure.
See,
I don't have SEC Big Ten money.
Pods, more of you people would listen all the time.
Yeah, then Ross wouldn't be at the courtyard, you know, outside.
I am at the courtyard. That's right. Yeah, I am at the courtyard. I'm near, but I am near a cookout, which is a positive. So,
that's positive.
Yeah, yeah. How about give me Penn State at USC? Dan, it's probably a game like, we're probably going to pick that one, but I'm really intrigued by this game. I mean, Penn State 5-0, USC 3-2. Obviously, for you and USC, they got to win out, you know, to have any chance. Could you imagine what the pressure's going to be if USC is 3-3 through its six games first year in the Big Ten under Lincoln Riley in his third year? Not great. So big game for them to win at home, and of course for Penn State trying to keep alive, your undefeated record. And you know, Penn State is one of those teams we talked about it. I think if you use the 12-team playoff over the last 10 years, if the 12-team playoff existed, Penn State would be in as an at-large more than any other team, I think, like five times, like half the year. So you would think that they're in position to do that in the first year here and grab an at-large berth, if not something more. But you need these wins because Penn State does get Ohio State, obviously, at the in a couple of weeks. So this is a big one over there in LA.
All right, I'm going to pick two because this may be the last round. One is Rutgers hosting Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Both teams tied for eighth in the 18-team Big Ten. Very exciting. You get two eighth-place teams getting after each other. Nebraska, Rutgers started strong. Wins over Washington at Virginia Tech. Only scored seven at Nebraska. Did not come out and play the way they wanted to do. But here we are. Wisconsin, I don't know how good they are. They lost to USC. They lost to Alabama. They've beaten Purdue, South Dakota, and Western Michigan. Rutgers could set themselves up for a very, very good season right here with this victory over Wisconsin. This is a brand name team in the Big Ten they don't normally beat. This is a belief that Greg Schiano's program this year is good enough to beat that type of team. We'll see. And if Wisconsin loses, there's going to be a lot of chirping that this is not what we were expecting 2 years into Luke Fickell. So I think there's some secret pressure here. The other one is just a totally crazy game that has Missouri visiting the Amherst Junkyard. Missouri at UMass. They have a 2-for-1. They played in like 2018, and then next year UMass has to visit Missouri. And schools used to do these, and you'd save money by doing this. Missouri could have bought the game out for $1 million and said, we're just not going to Amherst. Instead, they want to see the foliage. It is beautiful in the Pioneer Valley.
They want to see the junkyard, man.
They want to see the junkyard. Stadium. Famously declared the worst football stadium in college football last summer. It was the most attention UMass had gotten. I think they should embrace it was called a junkyard. They should embrace the junkyard just to get a jalopy in the corner. They should have like pits of fire. Games expected to sell out 17,000.
That's Diag, a sellout.
Diag okay. Partners, custom staffing solution stat of the week. Diag Partners, my friends at Diag Partners that don't give us anything for this bit. Comes from Eli Hoff at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You want a great stat? This will be the largest, I don't know, what has he phrased it? Greatest change in fan in attendance, potentially in college football history, between one game to the next, 1 week to the next, but certainly in the history of the University of Missouri. Last week, they played at A&M. 97,049 is the official capacity of the Texas A&M of Kyle Field. UMass is 17,000, so an 80,000 fan difference. A stat that I didn't know existed, because it didn't. Now, Eli looked back, and they had a 62,000 fan difference in back-to-back road games in 2015 when Missouri played at Georgia in front of 92,746, and then the next week played Vanderbilt at Vandy in front of 31,000. That's it. What a stat. I mean, is this the greatest change of, like, they're going to show up and be like, not only where's the upper deck, where's the third deck, where's the end zone? What? 17,000 in Amherst, but you got to bring it. Those foliage colors, they're going to distract them. They're going to go up to Antonio's Pizza uptown and they're going to get too much hot cheese up front. And it's going to be a mess for the Tigers. Look out.
This is Eli is a Missouri graduate, so I'm not surprised that he came up with the great stat. And as a Missouri graduate, I would love to challenge the UMass graduate on the podcast to a bet, but Dan has no alumni pride whatsoever.
What bet?
See? He won't touch it.
What's the bet?
No pride in his school. $1,000 straight up.
You want me to bet $1,000 on the University of Massachusetts football team?
Yes. Yes.
This is an esteemed university. You have to be smart and stuff. They make you smart. Uh-huh. I majored in pronunciation. Linguistics. $1,000. Pat. Kind of sucker. You got no street smarts at Missouri. That's your problem. They get it is journalism. Yeah, no street smarts. You got to suck someone in. You don't just sit there and say $1,000.
I know there is no bravado to appeal to you in UMass, so it doesn't work.
No, I'm smart enough not to do that. That's what they taught me. I'm quite proud of my education. $1,000, please. What is it? Do they 27.5? I would have no idea. How the hell do you come up with a spread on this?
No idea. I wouldn't want to touch it either way.
Oh, so you were bluffing.
Six-pack on the spread.
Six-pack. Okay. Somebody, I'll buy you I'll at the national championship game, I will get your drinks at the free bar.
Okay. 27.5? We putting the number?
Okay, 27.5. That's the bet. I'll buy you some drinks, or you buy me drinks. Time to play annual game of Would You Eat It? Texas State Fair. Obviously, we have the Texas Oklahoma game. Takes place at the Texas State Fair. We'll generally we say yes. It was a little better when Pete was up. Pete was he was a little more discerning in his taste. Although Ross a little bit. But here's some of the items you can get at the Texas State Fair. Would you eat it? Candied pork belly bacon bites. It's bacon wrapped in bacon, basically. Experience everything wrapped in bacon along with their new signature menu, the candied pork belly bacon bites. So it's just pork belly, and then they candy the pork belly, and then they wrap it in bacon. Ross?
I mean, yeah, I don't know that a lot of people here staying in the Grand Hyatt would eat something like that, but I would, yes.
Yes.
Totally.
Kale salad, plain.
I'm in for a pound of that.
It's a lot of salt.
That's fine.
A little something to cut it? No? All right. Yeah, I mean, I'd give it a shot. Deep fried potato salad right off the bat there. Yeah. Nothing special. Homemade potato salad with all the fixings. Shaped in balls, dipped in flour batter, and then deep fried to golden brown perfection. Pat, would you eat a deep fried potato salad?
You know, I'm a little wary of that. If it's mustard based potato salad, I don't think I'm in. If it's a more of a mayo base, you know,
I hadn't considered the mustard part.
Yeah. Yeah, no, like the mayo based potato salad. You got to go to Mark's Feed Store in Louisville, Kentucky, the best potato salad on earth. You deep fry that, I'll eat it.
Mayo, warm mayo, like deep fried mayo, doesn't appeal to me. No, I'm out on this one, buddy. If it's mustard, maybe it actually might be better. But
deep fried mustard? No, I mean,
mustard doesn't include like eggs in.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what mayo does? I mean,
that's.
Deep fried spaghetti and meatballs. Mayo. Deep fried spaghetti and meatballs.
Oh.
Comfort food to the next level with deep fried spaghetti and meatballs. The entire dish, I guess it's just spaghetti and meatballs, is breaded and fried into a portable, crunchy on the outside, soft on the inside experience. That's as decadent as it sounds. How decadent does that sound?
I do like things crispy on the outside and then, you know, kind of doughy in the inside. So I think I would give this a bite, Dan.
Yeah.
I'm all in. I like spaghetti in any form or fashion. And I've been known to make spaghetti sandwiches. This sounds like a spaghetti sandwich. I mean,
what is that? You put pasta, you put the pasta on a bread. You need, let's load up on some carbs here. Put the pasta on some bread. Hey, yeah.
This was something I adapted well before everybody knew you weren't supposed to eat bread because you might gain 2.5 pounds. Have to abstain from bread for life. You might gain 2 pounds. No, I'm out.
It looks in the picture like it's, then you have like a marinara dipping sauce, which I think would add.
Okay.
That's kind of nice. It doesn't really describe it all that well. There's that. Fat bacon pickle fries. Fat bacon pickle fries. These deliciously perfect slivers of dill pickles are battered and fried until golden brown. They are then lightly dusted in spicy ranch pepper seasoning. Lastly, they are ladled with the perfect blend of queso with just a hint of heat. And if that wasn't perfect enough, first off, there's a lot of just, this is a lot for a
it's a handheld. Lot. Yeah, you could have stopped at just deep fried pickles.
Oh, no, we're not done. This masterpiece is topped with thick-cut maple caramelized bacon chunks, sour cream, jalapeno, and chives for an explosion of flavor.
It's like basically they made like a fried pickle nachos, it sounds like. Honestly, it sounds pretty good, but you could have just stopped at like the fried pickles with some other thing, make maybe a couple of seasonings, but... I would try it. I would actually try it, I think.
I would certainly try it. And by the way, Ross is less picky than his predecessor.
Yeah.
He's less of a pill. So I appreciate the adventurous palate. I would certainly try it. But yeah, this is a little extra. Like, there's too much going on there. You know,
yeah,
we could have. Could have done a little less.
You had me at the spicy ranch pepper seasoning.
Right.
Maybe just a little pickle? Ranch or something to dip it in. Yeah, you're enough.
Yeah.
Hot Cheetos Korean corn dog. Korean corn dog tends to have like a sweet rice involved in the batter. So corn dogs are fair food staple. And this year we're kicking it up a notch. Korean corn dogs are making their hot and spicy state fair debut. So this is a new one. The Hot Cheetos Korean corn dog. These Korean corn dogs are half hot dog, half mozzarella cheese, battered in wheat and rice flour, coated with panko breadcrumbs, deep fried for an extra crispy crunch. Oh, the fun doesn't stop there. The delectable dog gets even tangier flavor. I want to meet the guy who has to write all this. You just run out of words to describe delicious. The delectable dog gets even tangier flavor once it's coated with spicy mayo. To tie it all together, it is then coated in hot Cheeto crumbs.
Yeah, a lot happening there, too. So I like it, and Dan, you do a nice job of reading the ad copy to make it sound like delectable. But I'm very much in favor of hot Cheetos. That's good. And so, and the dog, I could do that. Although, again, there's a lot happening. And my other concern here is thinking of when the people are going to be eating this before the Red River game in the morning Saturday after drinking their faces off the night before and then sitting in the stadium for 3 hours. There is some gastronomic distress just waiting to happen for people.
Somebody's getting assaulted at the lobby. Go back to Ross. What happened there?
I muted myself there so I could tune this out. But there's a lot happening here. A lot happening here.
Have a disruption
here downtown Nashville. I haven't seen Dolly. Okay, but Dolly's left the building.
Would you eat this thing?
So I am not a big hot Cheetos person. So I think I would stay away from this one. And also I have like acid reflux issues. You know, I take like a pill in the morning, but the pill probably would not work even, you know, with this food. I would stay away from this one.
I don't like mayo, and this is what I find funny, is there's a spicy mayo in addition to the hot Cheetos. Like, do you really need that?
Right.
Yeah. But I appreciate the effort there. All right, last one, a classic, the fried fireball shot. Angel food case infused with cinnamony fireball, deep fried, and then doused in more fireball and served in a shot glass. The ultimate state fair party shot, deep fried fireball shot.
I am not a fireball. I am not as big of a fan as many others are with fireball. I just I'm not the cinnamon, the hot doesn't sound great. Just give me the cake by itself. I'll be fine. So I'm declining on this one, Dan.
Give Ross the cake, and he's a bourbon guy. Give him just a glass of bourbon instead of fake bourbon.
Or just pour the bourbon over it instead of the
there you go.
The fireball. There you go. Yeah. How about that?
Look, fireball's fine in a pinch. You're sitting there. You're walking around the state fair. You're trying to get something in you before you go into the stadium. I would do it. I would certainly do it.
Fireball's fine in a pinch. Nobody's ever said those words before, I don't think.
Emergency only. Where I normally play golf, we have the drink stand, the beautiful Red Run Golf Club, Royal Oak, Michigan. We have the drink shack is at the second hole. Like, so you finish one hole, and my buddy Rick Meyer, when I play with him, even if we play at 6:30 in the morning, he usually will get fireball shots hole two, which is quite a situation. But it's 6:45 in the morning. I gotta say, I like them. Not a real surprise. I like them. I wouldn't drink one. I actually like them more in the morning. But really? I would just have the fireball. I don't really need the food cake thing. Maybe if you're trying to sneak in a drink with like your wife not noticing, something like that. Oh, I just got a little food here. It's just angel food.
Yeah, just a little angel food cake. That's all.
All right. I made the unfortunate promise that I would discuss this near castration.
Yeah.
2017. Texas football fan nearly castrated in bar fight in Oklahoma. If you don't want to hear about this, I understand. We're going to pick the games in about, I'd say about 3 minutes, because we're not going to last too long on this. So fast forward if you'd like. So what happened was guy walked into a known Sooner bar, Henry Hudson's Pub, wearing a Texas Longhorn shirt, and proceeded to talk a little smack. He quickly became the focus of football trash talk from another guy. This guy was 32. The Sooner fan was 53, Alan Michael Beckett. Thomas told police he decided to leave, went to the bar to pay his tab. So maybe he was really innocent on this. There's actually, a Barry Trammell, like, went back and talked to him and did a whole, actually, well-done feature on him years later. Because Barry Trammell, now at the Tulsa World, is tremendous. Anyway, the angry Sooner fan got upset. And so Beckett grabbed the Oklahoma fan grabbed the Texas fan in the crotch. I'm reading from FoxNews.com here. Pulled him to the ground and wouldn't let go. Even his bar patrons tried to break it up. Two men were separated. Thomas looked down and realized the extent of his injuries. Let's behave ourselves, Longhorn and Sooner fans.
If you talk to people about, well, what rivals are really serious? Well, you know, Ohio and Michigan fought a war over Toledo. Missouri Raiders burned Lawrence, Kansas to the ground once. But this is interpersonal and modern. Mm. And I think if you got a attempted castration on the record in your rivalry, you might have the most heated rivalry.
I can't deny that. That's just awful. Yeah. Awful situation. All right, let's break there. Back with Race for the Case. Here's our picks. Let's pick the games. This podcast is, like I said, this may be our last pod. If we're ever just ceremonially, just out of nowhere, you hear a different voice on this feed, we will return in some form somewhere. By the way, everyone is at least 500 or up. Pat and I are both 7 games over 500. Joe's 5 games over 500. Proof that these people that claim that they can help you with their picks don't know any more than we do, which is not a whole lot. But here we are. Buckeyes give... You're 17-17-2. Good job. You're back.
Yeah, you're
getting back to 500. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Pat and I are 21-14-1. Joe 20-15-1.
Let's let that sink in for a second. Tied for first, and Teddy, I got the fat bear.
Did he win?
Grazer won.
Oh, Grazer won. Dang, Chunk. Just come on, man. You're so close. Eat a few more fish. All right. Or another bear. Chunk needs to go murder somebody. Ohio State. This is going to be our last pod. I'm pretty sure. And this is it. We always wondered when this day would come. This is it. It was great. We will return. To accept no substitutes. I'm just saying. If it just happens one day, know something. Find us. We're out there.
That's right.
SOS. That's right. Well, Ohio State 3.5, given 3.5 to Oregon, 7:30 on NBC. Pat, who is going to take this?
Yep, I'll be there. Ross will be there. It's going to be a fantastic scene, fantastic game. We've talked about it a fair amount. I'm rolling with the Buckeyes. I think this is when they show how good they really are. They're going to win and cover.
I hate picking against the better team, but sometimes just what you got to do. I'm going to go with the loud road environment. In the Ducks to at least cover that 3.5.
I'm going to take Ohio State in this one. One thing that stood out to me when I was looking at both these teams this week, Ohio State's defensive line is really good. It's deep. They're rotating a ton of guys in. Tyreek Williams is a really, really good player. On the flip side, Oregon's had a ton of issues in the interior. So I think that that's where the separation point is. Oregon is not going to have the same level of success running the ball as we've seen over the past couple of weeks. Give me Ohio State.
Actual football insight on this podcast. Holy,
I want to see film.
Oh my goodness. As long as the Buckeyes offensive line can hold up, I'm not worried about them. I'd take Ohio State win and cover. Number one, Texas, given 14.5 against number 18, Oklahoma, 330. Behave yourself, fans. ABC's the game. Ross?
This is, for a rivalry game that we've seen so many upsets in so many close games, this is an insanely large number. I think Oklahoma covers. I think Texas probably wins the game, gets Quinn Ewers back. But even with the new OU quarterback there, freshman, right? Or maybe yep, redshirt freshman.
Michael Hawkins.
True freshman.
True freshman. Even with that, I think they stay within 14 points. So give me the Sooners to at least cover.
I'm with you there. I think I said this on the pod earlier in the week, but it's worth repeating. 9 of the last 10 times they've played in the regular season in the Cotton Bowl, it's been a one-score game, and most of them right down to the nub, and it really hasn't mattered how the teams have looked coming in. That's the way this game works out. Now, the exception was 49-0 Texas 2 years ago, but Oklahoma was in extreme quarterback distress then, ended up with like a third-teamer playing most of the game. That's not going to be the case. I think Michael Hawkins is a good player. He's just got to avoid making big mistakes. So I like Oklahoma getting that amount of points.
Albeit Texas is a lot better than Oklahoma, what you guys just said there's perfect for talking about this game. It's always a crazy game, no matter if there is massive separation. Oklahoma's defense, I think, is good enough, even though it's a tiny bit banged up, to keep it within 14 points. That line's just enormous. I'm surprised that they were willing to do that.
Tape of the pod. I told you we were going to probably have somebody come lurk by. So
they got a lock of the week.
No,
yeah.
It'll
if we're
be
gonna
an SEC
get fired,
team,
we might as well
sure.
go out. We might as well go yeah. out on glory. Yeah. Right?
Get yeah. a drink. Get them. Yeah.
I'm going lone horns here. They're going to load up against that. They're going to double spy Michael Hawkins and see if he can throw him and beat him. I'm taking Texas with all those points. That's the kind of bold picks you get here on the pod. Penn State given 4.5 at USC. Pat, the game's at 3:30 on CBS.
Yeah, you want a bold pick? I'll take the home dog there to not just cover, but win outright. I think USC's a desperate team and still a pretty good team. And Penn State has once again regressed to plodding offense. Penn State scored 27 points against a UCLA team. That is not good. And they've got the three-hour travel, which has been hard on teams in the Big Ten. And we got James Franklin whining about having to go to a bigger runway and a bigger jet out of Harrisburg. Blah, 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 blah. If he's worried about that, setting up for the Trojans there.
Fight underrated on. Point that they need a bigger airport to handle Big Ten expansion.
Yeah.
The State
yeah.
College Airport cannot handle a plane that can fly to the West Coast.
Who knew?
Amateur
Who
athletics.
Knew? There could be problems with yeah.
expansion. They'll probably build them one. I mean, in yeah. the SEC, that thing would already be lengthened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I'm with Pat here. Desperate Trojans at home, need a win. They cover.
I'm going to take Penn State in this. I am a little worried about the travel situation like you guys are talking about, but USC so far this year in Big Ten play, it feels like they've been out-physicaled by the teams that they've gone up against. Penn State's run the ball really, really well right now. I think that Penn State could pull this one out and cover that 4.5.
I'll take USC. I think they were fine against Michigan physically, except for one big run, two big runs, really. I do think they're desperate. I think it's they're due some nice calls. It's been a tough whistle for USC this year. The airport. It's got to be hard to get an airport extended, right? That seems very federal.
Think. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and there's, you know, some forest and hills you got to plow through up there in Happy Valley.
They do have those. Yeah, they're kind of hit like that. That's got some issues. I think that would be harder to do than you think. Although, you don't know. I'll take USC in that. Kansas State giving 4 at Colorado. 10:15 on ESPN. It's going to be a big one. I don't know where we're going back to. Ross?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll take it. Come to the lobby, Dan. We got you covered. I'm going to say that even though earlier in the pod, I said that I can't imagine Colorado slowing Kansas State's run game. I think they'll do enough offensively, Colorado will, to not just cover but win this game. So give me the Buffs to move to 5-1.
Holy moly, you covered every single base. You're a pro, you're con, you're all over the place on that.
I'm dealing with escalators, lobbies, Dolly Partons, administrators. You
adversity.
Know.
We deal with adversity on this
evictions,
podcast.
Evictions from boardrooms. You know,
the eviction was tough.
Pod's probably like 2 hours long at this point, too. I don't even. Oh, I lost track.
I think we're pretty long, but anyhow, I do not say this with great conviction because stuff happens late at night in Boulder, but I can't go against K-State with a dedicated running game, and we'll see whether Colorado's good enough to stop it. I'm going with the Wildcats.
I'm taking Colorado. Colorado's run defense has been better than I think people realize. It's not like a top statistical run defense, but they've been a lot better than the abysmal performance that they put out last year. Separation point for me is that if they can build a 10-point lead, kind of like what BYU did, I have a lot of fears that Kansas State can't climb their way back into it. So I'm going to take Colorado, and I think that they're going to win this one outright like Ross picked.
I'm going to take Kansas State in this. I'm sticking with my belief in this team, but really looking forward to the game. Not overwhelmingly. Anything can happen in a Colorado game. Iowa State at West Virginia. Cyclones given 3, 8 p.m. on Fox. Pat?
Yeah, I think I'm going home dog here with the Mountaineers. Iowa State, all credit to them. They're having an excellent season, but Dan, you kind of laid it out earlier. This, you're walking into a trap, and I just don't think Iowa State is good enough to continue winning in perpetuity. So this is a tough spot, and I think they get caught here, and the Big 12 continues to Big 12. So give me the Mountaineers and the points.
You don't just walk into, what is it called? Milan Pusker Stadium. Ride the PRT, Dan.
Yep.
And you ride the PRT, you don't, but after you get off the PRT and then you walk into the stadium, you don't just walk in. You get beat. West Virginia, cover, in win.
I'm going with Iowa State. Iowa State's front seven has been quietly one of the best in the country. West Virginia runs the ball really well. I think they're going to be able to slow them down. But the other side of this, West Virginia's secondary has been brutal. They gave up 300 passing yards to Albany's quarterback. I think Becht, I think Noel and Higgins are going to have a big game. Who's that receiving duo? So give me Iowa State. I think they're going to pull it out on the road.
I'll take WVU to cover. Maybe even win. We'll see. Great game. Picking Big 12 games. Terrifying. Terrifying. Yeah.
Joe's lone clone.
I've been doing well in my lock of the week, though. I think I had Texas Tech and Arizona State already this year. Big 12. All right, lock of the week. Speaking of, who's got one? Anyone do any research?
Let me go first.
Do
here
that so yeah,
I
can, get
before
you
I get
go
evicted
away.
Out of this cubbyhole here in the lobby.
Yeah.
Florida, Tennessee. Tennessee is a home favorite, 15.5 points. There's a little spark with the Gators. Not saying they're going to go in there and win in Knoxville, but I think they're going to go in there and give Tennessee a run and play a fourth quarter game. So give me the Gators and Billy Napier to go in there and cover. And maybe, Dan, maybe do the unthinkable and win the game.
I like the pick because I do think Florida's shown signs of life and Tennessee's shown signs of weakness, and that's too big a spread in that rivalry game. However, I'm going to go elsewhere in the SEC. LSU is a home dog against Ole Miss. I'll take it. I think it's I'm pretty sure I looked it up that Mississippi has not won in Baton Rouge in quite a while. I think they might be 9 straight losses there. And the setup here is also bad for Ole Miss. Second straight road game. They went to South Carolina. Now they go to Baton Rouge, a place they don't win. And LSU's coming off an open date. So LSU more rested, more prepared, playing at home against a team that doesn't win there. Give me the Tigers.
I am going to go with this week. Vanderbilt plus 13.5 versus Kentucky. Seems like a ridiculously big line going up against a Kentucky team that their offense, I wonder if they can even build a lead that big. I'm not saying Vanderbilt's going to win this game. I don't think that they're going to pull out the miraculous two-game stretch here because they still have that ugly Georgia State loss on their record. We don't really know who they are 100%, but their offense is consistent enough that they'll be able to, I think, cover that 13.5.
Boy, I'm gonna buy stock in Clemson. Given 20.5 at Wake Forest, I don't care. Wake Forest defense has given up points. Clemson is starting to score them. It's going to be a lot of Clemson fans there. Usually is. A little terrifying, but can they beat them by 3 touchdowns or more? I'm saying yes. Clemson Tigers giving 20.5 at Wake. Bold. I'm going bold. We'll be back on Sunday, perhaps.
Maybe. We'll see. maybe not.
Maybe everyone will not. There'll be no escalators. We don't know. We appreciate you guys listening to this ridiculous edition of the College Football Inquirer and subscribing and all of that. Thank you. We'll be back Sunday. Big weekend ahead. Talk to you later.